Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series in the book of the Song of Solomon with The Country Girl Kidnapped. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. Last time we discussed that the Song of Solomon is written in the form of a drama in five acts. And it tells a story about a love triangle between a country girl, her country boy lover to whom she is betrothed, and Solomon, who tries to steal her away from him. And I suggested that's the only view that I have ever come upon that really does justice to this book, doesn't make it an embarrassment, and doesn't kind of denigrate God and His Word. And so I believe this is what the Song of Solomon is about. And in it, we see an example of the kind of love and loyalty we should have toward God, and of the kind of love He has for us, which is not remotely like the love of a polygamist for one of his many wives. So today we are going to actually start studying this book, and beginning Act 1, in Song of Solomon 1, and the country girl kidnapped is the first portion. So in verse 1, it says, "The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's." I've already discussed the fact that that phrase, Song of Songs, is like King of Kings or Lord of Lords. It means the greatest of all songs. And we will see what that means probably as we get to our conclusion of the book. But it's the greatest of all songs, and it is not of Solomon, but for Solomon. And that phrase, which is Solomon's, I showed you, could mean concerning Solomon or even against Solomon. And I think that's what it means here. This is actually a rebuke to Solomon for his polygamy, ultimately by showing him what he's missing if instead he would have just one young lady who was in love with him. Verse 2, "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine." Now, this book is often going to be difficult to understand. I mean, it's not like if you read the book of 1 Samuel, and you're reading about Samuel, and you're reading about Saul, and you're reading about David, and it all makes sense. Whereas this book is very hard to have it make sense, and that's why people have come up with such ridiculous and wild interpretations of it. But I think that we could best understand this book if we understand that it's in the form of a play script. Now, have you ever read the script for a play? Even if you haven't been in a play, maybe you've read Shakespeare. Well, if you've read Shakespeare, you've read the script of a play, because, of course, that's what Shakespeare is, unless you're reading his sonnets. But otherwise, it's the script of a play, and you'll see that much of what Shakespeare writes are the lines of dialogue that the various actors are going to be saying. Now, there are also parts where it says, Othello says this, or Hamlet says this, or Hamlet picks up a skull, or Macbeth picks up a sword. And those will be stage directions, and also telling you who's speaking and what they're doing. But this book is in the form of a play script, only there are no stage directions. All that we have here is the dialogue. And we don't even have listed who is speaking or what they're doing. And so, no wonder that makes it somewhat difficult sometimes to figure out what is going on. But I think if we understand that's what this is, it's just the dialogue of like a play script, but with no directions or even notes as to who's speaking, well, then we can try to work it out. Now, you get some help from Hebrew, because Hebrew will sometimes, in the pronouns, let you know if it's a man or woman speaking, let you know if it's more than one person or one person speaking, who they're speaking of, a man or a woman. And so we'll get some help from there. But ultimately, we're going to try to gather everything that we know about what is going on and what the story is from what is said. And I'm going to try not to let my imagination run wild like so many people have done when they have tried to interpret this book. They just bring in all kinds of their own ideas and all kinds of modern ways of thinking and looking at things. And I told you about the guy who thought it was Aristotelian thought or Solomon having a conversation with wisdom, all kinds of wild things. Well, no, I'm going to try to not bring things like that in and just look at what is said and gather from that what is going on. However, to start out here, I'm going to have to give you kind of a background for us to even have a starting point to understand. And this background are going to be things I have hopefully drawn from other places in the book, all over in the book, and come to my conclusion as to what it means. But I'm just giving you what's going on here so we can kind of have a starting place and know where we're at. Otherwise, we're just lost to begin with. So I think what's going on here is that Solomon is returning to Jerusalem from one of his many weddings. Remember, Solomon was married to 700 women, and he had 300 slave wives whom he may or may not have had a wedding for. But a lot of those women were princesses, royal women from nations around Israel. That's how Solomon made peace and made alliances, was by marrying princesses. So he had lots of weddings. Now, you think of all the weddings you've been to in your life. Have you been to 700 weddings, do you think? Probably not. So Solomon, think about it. Solomon was actually the groom in more weddings than you have probably ever attended. Probably way more weddings than you have ever attended. And that's just a staggering thing when you think about it. So Solomon is returning to Jerusalem from one of his many weddings. Oh well, what else is new? Now along the way, it seems that he runs into and sees and falls for a little Israelite country girl. And that is kind of unusual for Solomon because it seems like, as you read about it in 1 Kings, it seems like he's always falling in love with foreign women. He typically doesn't have the time of day for his own Israelite women. But this girl, it seems, is particularly beautiful, and so he falls for her. And being the king, he figures he can get what he wants, so he forcibly takes her into his train, into his caravan, and is taking her back to Jerusalem, planning on marrying her. However, she was not entirely a single girl. She was betrothed. We could call that engaged to be married. But there is a difference. It was somewhat more than that. It was somewhat different than what we call engagement. But I'll explain that as we get to it in the story. But she was betrothed to a country boy. And she, therefore, has no desire to marry Solomon. She wants to marry this country boy. So she is understandably very upset about having been practically kidnapped and taken into Solomon's train. Now, it seems as the first scene opens that someone, probably one of Solomon's court ladies, whom he has put her in charge of, his court ladies, or who knows, maybe they're his concubines. Probably most of his court ladies were actually his slave wives. But who knows whether they're his concubines or whether they're his court ladies or not married to him. She is in charge of them, and it seems that one of those has offered her wine to try to calm her down because she's very upset. And her response is that she doesn't want wine, she wants kisses from the mouth of her beloved. She says, that's what would calm me down. That's what would make me feel better, is if he would kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Because she says, for your love is better than wine. She speaks to him, even though he's not present. Says, your love is better than wine. I'd rather have that than wine any day. Verse 3. Because of the fragrance of your good ointments, your name is ointment poured forth. Therefore the virgins love you. So she, in his absence, as she's all upset, kidnapped by Solomon, surrounded by his royal train, she finally remembers her beloved, and she remembers the fragrance of his ointments. Now remember at the time that it was not so common, they didn't have that much water, so it was not so common to bathe. So they would cover their body odor by pouring on a lot of ointments to try to cover the smell. So she is remembering the smell of her beloved's ointments and saying, I wish I could smell them right now. Then she says, your name is ointment poured forth. So she remembers her beloved's name and says, it's like ointment. Just hearing his name is like smelling beautiful ointment. Now, throughout this story, we don't get the name of either this country girl or her country boy lover. And that makes it a little awkward. But if we remember that this book was actually written to Solomon as a rebuke, and I think maybe giving away some of the story here, but I think we're going to see that Solomon sort of ends up the loser here at the end of the book. And so this book is being written to him to rebuke him. Well, it probably wouldn't be too healthy for this poor young country girl or her country boy lover to remind Solomon of their names. And who knows if he even remembers the name of all of his 1,000 wives. So who knows if he remembers their names? He probably doesn't. But reminding him of their names might not be too good for them. He might say, maybe I should look them up and get a little revenge for what happened. So I think the Spirit of the Lord is being very considerate of them by not mentioning their names. But that means we're going to have to try to understand the story without knowing the names of this couple. Well, we just have to accept that. But she loves his name. She says, your name is like ointment poured forth. She says, therefore, the virgins love you. She says, therefore, all the young women love you. They can't help it. I'm the lucky one who's going to marry you, but all the young women love you. They can't help it. Just seeing you, just hearing your name, they have to love you. Verse 4, draw me away. We will run after you. The king has brought me into his chambers. We will be glad and rejoice in you. We will remember your love more than wine. Rightly do they love you. Now, in this verse, it seems we are jumping back and forth between speakers. And again, it's made difficult by the fact that, unlike in a play script, there is no label as to which his person is speaking when. But I think we get some clues from the Hebrew pronouns. First of all, she's still speaking when she says, draw me away. And this is what she really wishes would happen, is that her beloved would come and draw her away so they could flee from Solomon together. Now, these court ladies, though they might be sympathetic to this poor young girl who is so upset, has been taken away from her home and her family and her beloved and made to go off with Solomon. She's very upset. Well, they're sympathetic toward her. But still, they let her know, we will run after you. We're not going to let you just run off. Solomon would be angry with us if we did that. So don't think we'll just let you run away. We'll run after you if you try it. Then she speaks again, the king has brought me into his chambers. And that's what Solomon had done. Now, I don't think these are his chambers like in his palace, but remember, the king is traveling here. That's how he saw her. He was traveling through her home country, and he spotted her. So she is in the inner chambers of his tents. Now, Solomon, though he was David's son, was not like David. He didn't grow up as a common shepherd boy. He didn't grow up sleeping in the fields. When Solomon is traveling through the country, he's traveling with a huge caravan and very rich, fancy tents, and he's not sleeping on the ground or roughing it or anything. So she is in the inner chambers of his tents. And these are some very fancy, very expensive and rich tents that she is in. But the king has brought her there, and he's brought her more or less against her will. Then we will be glad and rejoice in you. It seems these country ladies speak up, and some of them are very impressed by this young girl and her love for her shepherd. So they said, we will be glad and rejoice in you. We really find you as really something, a girl like her so loyal to her beloved country boy. We're rejoicing in that. And then they say, we will remember your love more than wine. So they copy her words about her beloved country boy and say, we'll remember his love too, that's better than wine. And so she speaks up and says, rightly do they love you. She agrees. They're right. They're upright. They're doing the right thing to love my shepherd and prefer I marry him rather than Solomon. And certainly we can say that compared to marrying a raging polygamist like Solomon, marrying some country boy who would be loyal to you, well, that's what we would suggest, hopefully, if we are really honestly concerned about a young girl, we'd probably suggest she marries the country boy who loves her rather than the king who's just going to throw her into his harem. So we agree. They were upright to wish this for her. Verse 5, I am dark but lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. So it seems at this point that some of Solomon's court ladies from Jerusalem are looking down on her because she is dark. So some of these ladies are very sympathetic to her and some are not. And that shouldn't surprise us. You know, in our society, we don't have servants serving women and serving men. And so we're not so familiar of the ways of servants as they would be in a society where servants were common, household servants. But household servants will not all have the same opinions. Some of them might be sympathetic to this poor young girl whom their master has forced into his train, wants to force to marry him and doesn't want to. They'd be sympathetic and feel bad for her. Whereas others, their first thought would be their loyalty to their master. And they'd say, no, I want to support my master's cause no matter what. And I want this dumb girl who doesn't appreciate being loved by the king to change her mind. So some of them are much less sympathetic and some of them are much more sympathetic, as we'll see through the story. But these, perhaps the less sympathetic ones, are looking down on her. Why? Because she's dark, even though she's lovely. And we'll see why she's dark later. So she says to them, I am dark, but I'm lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar. And the tents of Kedar were always black. So she says, I'm dark like those tents of Kedar. Then she says, like the curtains of Solomon. Now, Solomon's curtains were not black, but she means Solomon's curtains are lovely. So she's dark, she's black like the tents of Kedar, but she's lovely like the curtains of Solomon. Now, you might be wondering, I thought you said that this was an Israelite country girl. So why is she black? Well, we find out in verse 6. Do not look upon me because I am dark, because the sun has tanned me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I have not kept. So here we see that the reason she is dark, the reason she is black like the tents of Kedar, is because of the sun. The Hebrew says, the sun has looked upon me. And so dark or black means that she is suntanned. Now, she doesn't mean she's African black. If any African black person told you, I'm black because I was out in the sun too much, well, they're not telling you the truth. You know that. They're probably joking around or something. But no, that's not why they're black, because they've been out in the sun. But this girl is black because she's been out in the sun. So that shows she's not African black. She's just suntanned, like the New King James has made it. So it seems that at this point in Jerusalem, it was the fashion for the women to like to be very pale. Probably because that shows you are a fancy court lady who doesn't have to go out in the sun and work like a manual laborer. Whereas this crude country girl has been out grubbing in the dirt like a common laborer, and so we look down on her. And she says, don't look down on me because I'm suntanned. I am lovely. And don't look down on me because I'm suntanned, she says, because my mother's sons were angry with me. Well, of course, this means her brothers, her mother's sons. Why does it put it that way? Does this mean they're only her half-brothers? Well, probably not, because remember, this is a society, certainly led by Solomon, that indulges in polygamy. And when you have a polygamous society, it would be very common that you would have half-brothers and sisters who are your father's sons, but not your mother's sons. But it would be extremely less common to have half-brothers through your mother. They're your mother's sons, but not your father's. That would be much less common in a polygamous society. So probably when she says mother's sons, that's to mean that they are not half-brothers. They are her full brothers. So she says that they were angry with her, and they made her the keeper of their vineyards. And of course, that was why she had to be outside. They had made her keeper of their vineyards. But she seems to view them as being unkind by doing this, because she says, but my own vineyard I have not kept. Now, I differ here with Christian David Ginsburg, Dr. Christian David Ginsburg, whom I said suggested this idea, and he's the one I'm getting this interpretation from. He thought the brothers were very kind and very concerned about her and very good to her. Well, I think he was looking at his own society, how older brothers would typically treat their younger sister. But as I look at it, she doesn't seem to think that they're so kind to her. And so I would tend to agree with her. I think he was reading his own society and his wishes as to what brothers should do for their sister into the story. But they made her keep their vineyard, but she says, I haven't been able to keep my own. So she might have had her own vineyard, or it could also be she's speaking poetically of what she's supposed to be doing. So she's in betrothed to be married, and she should be with her mother learning how to do household tasks, learning how to take care of a household, learning how to do the housework, learning how to care for children, all those things she's going to need to know. And that's what a betrothed girl would be doing during the time between her betrothal ceremony and her marriage, is learning how to be a wife. And so she might mean, that's the vineyard I'm supposed to be taking care of, and instead my brothers have me taking care of their literal vineyards out in the fields, and so I'm getting suntanned. Now notice here we learn a fact about this country girl, and that is that her family business is vineyard keepers. Very nice country type of occupation. Verse 7. Tell me, O you whom I love, where you feed your flock, where you make it rest at noon. For why should I be as one who veils herself by the flocks of your companions? So now she wishes, she speaks aside to her beloved, who is not there, and asks him to tell her, O you whom I love, where you feed your flock and make it rest at noon. And here we learn that her country boy betrothed, her beloved, is an animal keeper, a shepherd. And again, a nice country occupation. So she and her family are vineyard keepers, and he is and his family are shepherds, keeping sheep. So she's wondering where he feeds his flock and makes his rest at noon, because she says, why should I be as one who veils herself? Or some translations of the Old Testament says, who wanders by the flocks of your companions. If I get away from Solomon and his train and come and try to find you, why should I get lost and have to wander and not know where you are? So she wishes to know where he is, in case she gets away, or at least to send a message to him to tell him what's happened to her. She wants to know where he is. Verse 8, if you do not know, O fairest among women, follow in the footsteps of the flock, and feed your little goats beside the shepherd's tents. Now here it seems the court ladies answer her. They say, well, if you don't even know where your betrothed man is, whom you think so highly of, O fairest among women. So they're kind of making fun of her, it seems. These are some of the court ladies who are less sympathetic. Well, they say, well, then just follow the footsteps of the flock. Find some sheep footprints and follow them. And feed your little goats by the shepherd's tents, those rude and crude country shepherd types. Just go and hang out with them, like the little country imp you are, if you prefer some silly shepherd to the king. So they don't seem very sympathetic to her at all. Well, that is the first scene, her interaction with these court ladies of Solomon. And now the next scene, it seems that Solomon enters. And here we have the first encounter between the girl and Solomon. And he is trying to tempt her to marry him and give up on her betrothed. So verse 9 is Solomon speaking. He says, I have compared you, my love, to my filly among Pharaoh's chariots. So he speaks to the girl, and he compares her, and he calls her my love, very bold there. He compares her to a filly or to a mare in Pharaoh's chariots. Now remember, this was something Solomon did. Is according to the law, kings were not supposed to multiply horses, and yet Solomon had done so. And kings especially were not supposed to return to Egypt, from which the Israelites had fled back at the time of Moses, and they weren't to return to Egypt to get horses. And Solomon had done exactly that, getting chariots from Egypt. So this shows this is Solomon. He's comparing her to his filly, and probably his chariot horses were all decked up and decorated and ornamented and made beautiful to pull Solomon's chariots. And so he's comparing her to one of these beautiful horses among Pharaoh's chariots. Verse 10, your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with chains of gold. So he praises her beauty. He praises her beautiful cheeks, but he says, your cheeks are lovely with ornaments. Your neck is lovely with chains of gold. Now, where did a simple country girl get all these lovely ornaments? She probably had some, but all kinds of lovely ornaments on her cheeks? Where did she get chains of gold on her neck? Do you think she was wearing a bunch of chains of gold when she went out to take care of the vineyards? Probably not. No, Solomon has given her these ornaments. Solomon has given her these chains of gold, and he's trying to tempt her with wealth, with the lust of the eyes. 1 John 2:16 talks about the lust of the eyes and the lust of the flesh and the pride of life. And that's how Solomon is trying to tempt her here, with the lust of the eyes, these beautiful ornaments, to make her even more beautiful, he says. And then his courtiers speak up and join with him, try to put the heat on her by saying, we will make you ornaments of gold with studs of silver. You'll get even more rich decorations if you just marry Solomon. So they are trying to tempt her to marry him and forget her beloved shepherd. So in this portion, we see that Solomon, returning to Jerusalem from one of his many weddings, happens to meet a country girl and falls for her beauty, taking her by force into his caravan. She is not happy, however, for she is betrothed to a country boy, and she longs for him. She resists Solomon's advances and longs only for her shepherd. And in this, we see a picture of the kind of love God would like us to have for him. Are we as loyal to our heavenly lover as this simple country girl was to her country boy lover? Do we love God, and would no temptation of the enemy entice us away from him? Well, I pray that that's true. I pray we love him just that way.
A proper understanding of the purpose of this book of the Bible is necessary to gain the insight that God would have us to learn from it. In the opening act of this story, it is already promising to show dramatic parallels to our relationship that we have with our Heavenly Father. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on The Country Girl Kidnapped. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series in the book of the Song of Solomon with The Betrothed Couple. Thank you for joining us today. We trust that you are learning that the more we study God's Word, the more we can trust God. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We offer a free weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on his mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.